This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.
Hey, 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 Yakshamash.
Club to you too, or whatever.
You know, really, I love your style. I love the way you edit things together. Well, thanks for noticing. It's a real pain.
We welcome to the show, Christian Leitner.
Yeah, I'm proud of my heritage, and my mother used to make a lot of delicious meals. Kapusta, funky, pierogi, all that good stuff. I put sour cream on everything, and so a lot of Polish tradition there.
Shamash, everybody. This is Jacob Karowski coming to you live from Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Make sure you guys go to Bucky's Fifth Quarter for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, discussion, and it is a very nice Wednesday night. A little cool, obviously, getting down to December. I haven't talked to you guys for a couple of weeks. Hope you guys' Thanksgiving went well. Right now, the Wisconsin Badgers are in a dead heat, and looking at right now with the Syracuse Orangemen, and we'll see if the Badgers can pick that out, if they can grab that lead, and obviously in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. And like I said, I'm Jacob Karowski. Thanks for joining. I was waiting for the Polish Rifle Scott Wisniewski to jump on board. And it should be a good time. We're going to talk, obviously, we're going to preview the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions. We'll also talk some Wisconsin Badgers football, some Big Ten honors, and that's from two former walk-ons, first team All-Americans there, but you're also looking at the fact that you have some other honors there, and maybe, you know, should Michael Caputo and Vince Beagle been higher up than what they were? We'll take a look at that. So, since we're waiting for Scotty, let's talk real quick about this. Let's talk about if you saw Bucky's Quarter, of course, check us out there for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, and discussion. You had the fact that Alex Erickson yesterday, on Tuesday, was named the first team All-Big Ten selection as a wide receiver by the media, second team by the coaches. And then also Joe Schobert on Monday named for consensus first team All-Big Ten and also won the Butkus Fitzgerald Award for the best linebacker of the year. And both were former walk-ons. Obviously, it's a great accomplishment for both. And then all on top of that, you also had 10 others that were named to the All-Big Ten honors as well. So despite losing two games, which they really could have won, yeah, they're one play away on each game from being 11-1, which is something we'll discuss a little later about the season. But still a successful season, I'd say, literally they're two plays away from being 11-1. But before we do that, we're going to talk some Packers. We've got the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, and out this new computer that I have over here. Hopefully he can hear me. Scotty, how you doing, brother? How was your Thanksgiving?
Hey, it was great. Well, it was okay. I mean, we had some issues, but it was a great day. You are really quiet, though. I don't know if you're aware of that, but
I am not. Let me test this out a little bit. Don't mind me. Yeah, we are on.
Yeah,
the
no.
Right now, so I'm testing this out. Any better? Any better, brother?
A little bit, sure. Sure, that sounds good. Okay, so before we get into anything, because I know we're going to talk, this could very well be a very dismal next 4 or 5 months for sports, and I'll tell you why. Packers, better if they don't figure things out, could be one and done if they make the playoffs. The Badgers could have had a New Year's Day bowl, but they lost a game to Northwestern they had no business losing, and probably actually won. They lost the game to Iowa that they had won. And you can imagine if it was only one loss, they'd be playing for a Big Ten championship because they'd be undefeated in conference. So they went from having a major, major bowl to, I don't know, maybe the Holiday Bowl. The Badgers basketball team's going to struggle. Marquette's struggling. The Bucks have struggled out of the gate, and the Brewers are going to be abysmal. It could be some dark days ahead for us in Wisconsin, in our home base here, for those of you listening that aren't from Wisconsin. So just to you know, hopefully it's a nice warm winter so people can get out of the house and enjoy themselves, because there might not be a lot to cheer for, so to speak.
Yeah, no, it's very true, and yeah, just given our eldest, who will be turning four, his goodnight kiss and whatnot. But yeah, no, that you're looking at right now in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Obviously we're not going play by play at all, but you're looking at the fact that the Badgers right now are supposed to get the last shot, tied at 53, with a few seconds left, with just maybe about 10-12 seconds left. If the Badgers can somehow pull off a victory, and you mentioned it too, the Badgers have been struggling in basketball. Obviously, they shot only 23.5% from the field on Sunday in their loss to Oklahoma, their 18-point defeat. Not a good way, obviously, to start it off. Non-conference play, some big time non-conference play. They're bouncing back. They're playing well against Syracuse, ranked number 14 in the nation. While my computer decides to fizzle out, because you gotta love new technology, I can't get a score update. But, you know, they've played well, they've played tougher, they're playing against that 2-3 zone that Jim Boeheim likes to play. But no, it's gonna be a rough, I mean, obviously, and maybe, you know, he talks about the Badgers, we'll talk a little bit later with them about just that, the season so far, and how you think of it, and their bowl prospects.
I think they're better than they played. The shooting concerns me. They're young, and they lost some. I mean, gosh, they lost some big time players. I understand that, and I didn't expect them to be a Final Four team or even a Sweet 16 team. But I do expect them to be a little better than they've played. But we'll get into that. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start Pac? Which abysmal? We want to talk about the abysmal loss on Thanksgiving or the nice win that Wisconsin against Minnesota, though they had to do it without Corey Clement, which, again, just another one of those side stories to what hasn't been a great year. And again, realistically, and I hate to play woulda, coulda, you know that, but two plays away from playing in a Big Ten championship game.
Right. Let's talk some Packers first. It's a little bit more prevalent. You're looking at the fact that we can recap some of the Badger-Syracuse game. Right after that, too, for the basketball. So let's talk a little bit Packers. Obviously, it's a day away. You're looking at the Packers are facing a team that obviously is now, won three in a row, and they look pretty impressive against the Eagles on Thanksgiving. Then again, who hasn't looked well against the Eagles this year, unfortunately, we have some friends of the show and Chris Maragos and Bo Allen from former Wisconsin Badgers that we've had a chance to speak with on the show. So we hope that they hope things turn around there, though. Yeah, obviously rumors are swirling regarding good old Chip Kelly and where he'll go. But you're looking at the fact that you've heard talk. I think many people have had like a full week to digest the loss, and you've heard it too, Scotty, on sports radio, regardless of what station, but. What in your opinion is ailing the Packers? And obviously, this you're looking at their offensive end in all likelihood, because the defense has held their part. They haven't been great, but then again, you don't need to have a great defense when you're supposed to have Aaron Rodgers man in your offense.
Well, yes and no. Like the last 2 weeks, the defense has been actually the last 3 weeks, the defense has been better. Going back to the Detroit game, the defense has been decent, but there is a stretch in there, including the Denver game, where they absolutely got destroyed. There was a three-game stretch where they were god-awful. That didn't help. But I'm not going to put any of this on the defense. There's obviously problems offensively, and the most glaring one to me is that wide receiver, the lack of development to the next level by Davante Adams, the injuries to Ty Montgomery and Jared Abadaris, who have, I think, could have had a golden opportunity to step up the way Adams has played. James Jones hasn't been in sync the last few weeks. Maybe that's a product of him being an older receiver. He came out of the gate hot, but, you know, with some of the other injuries, he's been called on to be a primary target, and maybe that's not his cup of tea anymore. Lacy had a good game, and then last week had a fumble, a huge fumble that found him on the bench and hurt them. Aaron Rodgers has been out of sync, but again, it just seems like he's more out of sync with Davante Adams than anybody. And they both have to take some of the blame on that. I'm not giving Rodgers a pass, but it's funny because you look at the completion percentage when he's tried to go to Adams, it hasn't been really good. And it's not just the drops. I mean, you can blame Adams on the drops, but how many times have we seen in the last 4 weeks where Adams goes right and Rodgers goes left or vice versa? So they're clearly not in sync. The other thing I think we've seen with this offense, and I like him a lot, and I've always been a fan of his, and I think he plays hard and he's a really good in the slot, but I think we found that Randall Cobb's not a number one receiver because of his size, and he is a great in the slot, but when he's getting the extra focus, with Jordy Nelson not being there, they know he's the second most talented receiver in the bunch. It's been tough sledding for him. So I think that's one thing we can definitely say that this whole thing has proved is that he's not a number one receiver. He's a great slot receiver. He's a great number two. He's a guy who can do a lot of things out of the backfield, a la Tavon Austin and Percy Hart. Like, he's great at what his role is. But to be the guy who draws double teams and try to fight through that, that's not him. And the other problem, which we knew about, and again, we talked about it a couple weeks ago with Wes. We talked about Vernon Davis. No production really out of the tight end position. None. You know, I think Richard Rodgers is an average NFL player. I think he's going to play in this league for a while. He may grow a little bit more as far as his role with the offense, and he may improve as time goes. But they don't have that threat. Now, a lot of look, not everybody has a Gronkowski. Not everybody has a Gates. Not everybody has a Tyler Eifert. But can he beat Kyle Rudolph, for crying out loud? Can he beat Martellus Bennett? Those are good NFL tight ends. They're not the Gronks of the world or the Greg Olsons, but they're good. Can he be that? Because that's what they need. It's going to be hard to find a matchup freak like Jermichael Finley was. But they're going to have to get better production out of that position than they're getting right now. So that because of that, and then I still think the offensive line is just banged up. They're all playing hurt, and you've seen it. Now, the biggest criticism I've had on Rodgers isn't that he's been out of sync with his receivers. It's that he hasn't run when he's had open chances to run. He's held onto the ball longer than he has, and he's taken more hits. Only half of that is on the offensive line. The other half is on him. How many times did they block for 5 or 6 seconds, and he had time to escape the pocket, and he didn't? And so then you start asking the question, we know about the shoulder that came out a couple weeks ago, but is there some injuries there that nobody's talking about or that he's hiding or that he's masking, that he's afraid to take off and maybe doesn't want to take a hit? I think it's a blip in the radar screen. I think next year over the offseason he'll be fine, I think. But if he's starting to get worried about taking hits already, and that's why he's not escaping the pocket, that doesn't bode well for his long-term future of wanting to play another 6, 7, 8 years at a high level. Again, I'm not pressing the panic button. I'm just saying if he's not hurt and he's just electing to not run because he doesn't want to take those hits, is he already starting to hear ghosts? Is he hearing footsteps? Who knows? But all of it's been out of sync. Maybe it's the play calling. Maybe they need a real offensive coordinator. Maybe they need to put some little wrinkles in this offense. Maybe they need to not be in the shotgun as much as they are. Because I watched Denver, and I watched Brock Osweiler be successful doing things that Denver hadn't done with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's been in the pistol like 70% of the snaps, or the shotgun. And essentially because he's a great or was a great quarterback, he's at the end of his career now. With Osweiler, there's still the play action. There's still the threat of the run. They still use the run to set up the pass when they need to. Maybe they just need some new formations. I don't know. I think no matter what, if they don't go far in the playoffs, there will be some changes on his coaching staff, and it'll probably include bringing in a different offensive coordinator / play call.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at with that, I mean, obviously with Rodgers and seeing what he's doing, You notice a little bit more out of the pistol with some of the runs they've had. I mean, they've gotten Lacy going, but I don't know it's hard to prescribe what exactly is going on. I mean, there's been talks about preparation, like Chris Collinsworth mentioned some sort of all-players meeting that Aaron Rodgers refuted last week or earlier this week, talking about how do they describe it, Scott? Basically, he said it's mental preparation, so maybe their heads aren't in the game. But then again, he's pointing the finger to himself as well. What's going on? But, you know, you look at I even watched, some of Twitter, and you see some of, like, Aaron Nagler from Cheesehead TV talking about some of the throws. And, there's a throw to Devontae Adams that's wide open. Now, granted, every quarterback's not going to get the right throw all the time. But this is Aaron Rodgers, right? This is supposed to be the MVP, continual MVP of the year. And he just flat out missed him. It could have gone for a long game. It was a nice in pattern. Had Devontae Adams wide open, and he throws it in the dirt. He almost one-hopped him. And you kind of stare and just like, what exactly is going on? They talked about the shoulder injury that he was listed to have. He had, is there something up with that? You've seen him pull on his hamstring a little bit. He hasn't really fully, he's run a little bit, especially against Chicago. He had some runs, but, he came up against the Carolina game and had that. It just goes to show you. I'd say the lack of receivers in terms of what they've done and not being able to get separation. You can't get the separation that Jordy Nelson got with when you have James Jones. James Jones was a revelation in the beginning of the year and catching all those touchdown passes and whatnot, but he's not going to beat you deep. He's not going to get that separation that a Jordy would and lining up as a one or Devontae Adams as like the X or the big wide receiver compared to Cobb as the Y. You mentioned it. Cobb he needs someone to complement him, and that's not a diss on Cobb. Obviously, he's a very talented player that's used in multiple formations in that Packers team, whether it's in the slot, out wide, or as a running back. You take a look what he's done as a runner too. That he's multifaceted, but it's just there's no one to take that pressure off of him, and you've seen some players step up a little bit. I mean, they're trying to get Jeff Janis some snaps, which I know everyone is on this hype train for him, which I'm not necessarily sold on based off of I trust the coaches on that, Mark. But you also have had like Jared Aberderis who hasn't been able to stay healthy. He had a great game against the Lions and had the fact that he had, what was it, 4 catches for 57 yards and then had a big catch that, then he gets knocked out with ribs. And he was listed as probable today on the injury report. But can he get open and find some space and give Cobb a little opening? I mean, there's just hasn't been that consistent, at least in the past, 5-6 games of that offense clicking correctly. And so we'll see what they do. And maybe it's something where the Packers turn into more of a running team right now. You had Lacy. Granted, he had that one fumble, Scotty. He had that, which obviously was a bad one, set up a Chicago Bears touchdown and kind of turned that momentum around on Thanksgiving night. But really, you look at the fact that, what him and Starks were able to do against that Bears defense. Now, the Lions defense may be different, but give those guys the ball and just see if they can carry him for a while. And maybe that sets up that play you mentioned, that play action a little bit more. Maybe it sets up a deep ball, which granted, Janis on Thursday night didn't necessarily work out that well. But something like that. Maybe they just go back and they pound the rock. Take a page out of Barry Alvarez and Paul Chris playbook of obviously a pro-style offense, but one that it's dictated by the run for a while, and then that sets up that play action down the road. And, maybe that helps them at least get by until you see some receivers and you see the tight ends and also Rodgers just step up. Maybe once they find that groove, they're just off one click. They can jump back into this.
Well, there's that, and then there's the small things, two plays. Again, find two plays that change the game, okay? I'll find you two. One was the bad snap that took them out of field goal range, because if they kicked the field goal there, then that last drive, they're only down they're down a field goal, and they're looking to win the game on a field goal, okay? The other play was the quick whistle on the defensive offsides where Cobb was wide open for probably a touchdown. And I still don't understand why the whistle blew, because there wasn't an unabated to the quarterback situation. Cobb was gone. So those are the two plays. I mean, I think most games, unless it's an absolute blowout, you can always look for two plays that would have turned the game around, and any one of those two obviously would have been the difference in the game.
Yeah, absolutely could have. So, and I mean, it goes back to that where you go back to it, and it really just goes back to, you know, we've talked, I mean, it goes back even the Badger season where, you know, one play makes it. There's a false step, a fumble by Stave at the goal line, and you're looking now at the fact that the Badgers could have, I mean, they could have, right now they could have beat the number three team in the nation, or the number four now. I think, no, Iowa's number four, yeah. You know, and then, you know, they're literally one game away, play call away. And granted, they had five turnovers in that game. They deserved to lose, but then again, Northwestern didn't play that much better. And they're one interpretation of a call away from beating a top 15, top 20 Northwestern squad. And you know, the Packers had, in that final drive, four plays to get 8 yards, and they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And even the games they were terrible in, Carolina, terrible, but they had a chance to tie the game with a two-point conversion. Detroit didn't play well offensively, but had a chance to win it at the end. They're not winning those games or tying those games at the end when they have a chance. So if they go ahead, and really the only game they had no chance in was Denver. That they got absolutely whooped in Denver. Every other game, even when they played poorly, they've been right there, but it's been too little too late.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, and so you go to this game. I mean, what? No, it could just be something. Obviously, we'll talk about down the road. I mean, we'll talk about coming up next week. But I mean, see if they come through. What are the keys to beating the Lions? Obviously, like I said, the Lions aren't a slouch right now. I mean, they're playing very well. Obviously, they've changed up management. They've changed up many things. Where do they go from here, Scotty?
They're still better than Detroit, even if they haven't played better. They're still better than Detroit. They still should go out and beat Detroit if they finish drives, if they are better on third down, if they have a good mix of run and pass, and if they do what they did. Basically, if the defense does what it did last time, which is held them to almost nothing. I mean, they had that long kick return that they converted into points. Otherwise, if the defense plays like it did in Green Bay, and the offense is just a little bit more sharper, they should win that game. Now, that doesn't mean they will, because, I mean, we said the same thing about the Bears game. But they should beat Detroit by just being the Packers.
You would think. You'd hope so. On that note, by the way, just not to change the subject real quick, Wisconsin, big upset against the Syracuse Orangemen. They come into the game, and they beat the Syracuse Orangemen. You're looking at 66-58. So the Badgers come through on that end, and you look at the fact that obviously after a really bad loss against the Oklahoma Sooners, Jim Ross's favorite team. You're looking at the fact now that it's a huge win. I think it's a huge confidence boost for the Badgers, and we'll talk more about that once we get some get the box score and we go from there. So, anything else? I mean, obviously, you're looking at the rest of the NFL, and anything that's been surprising you? I mean, the Broncos. No. Brock Osweiler more now. I mean, obviously, Peyton Manning's injured. You're looking at the fact that the Patriots lost their first game of the season to those Broncos. The Panthers obviously continuing their undefeated ways. What's been some of those standout
things? Isn't that the story? I mean, the Panthers. I mean, the fact that they have gone this far into the season and they're the last undefeated team, I think that's definitely the story. Look, I take nothing away from them because they've had some wins. They've done really well. Take nothing away. But I do think that those old crotchety coots in Miami will be popping champagne in a couple weeks because they're not going to go undefeated. you know, I thought New Orleans, New England had a chance. I did, but I don't think there's going to be, those old Miami Dolphins are going to have to worry about their streak QB. That said, Carolina should be the number one seed. Are they the best team in the NFC? I mean, record-wise, sure. Statistically, they're up there. Seattle still scares me. I mean, they're the team I don't want to play in the postseason, and they've worked their way into a wild card spot right now if the season ended today. Arizona, could they be for real? And who would have thought that we'd be saying, I mean, they were both playoff teams or playoff caliber teams, but who would have said at the beginning of the year, oh, yeah, it's probably, you know, right, as we get into week 13, it's going to be Arizona and Carolina fighting it out for the supremacy in the NFC. And maybe we're talking Green Bay, Seattle, right? Dallas. We're talking Dallas because that was before Romo got hurt. So who would have thought? So could it still be Green Bay? Could it still be Seattle? Could they still right the ship? Because talent-wise, those teams still are more talented, right? I mean,
right,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
And in the AFC, you know, Cincinnati's been great, but they have to win a playoff game first. It's still New England to me. I mean, I know Denver beat them. I get it. I'd still, especially if they get Edelman and Gronkowski healthy for the playoffs, I still wouldn't bet against New England, against really anybody right now. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Pittsburgh's a little bit too banged up, I think, to be that elite team with Bell being out. And Roethlisberger's been up and down. He might play this week. He might clear protocol for the concussion. But I still think it's New England against – I'm not sure yet in the NFC.
Yeah, no, that's what makes it'll make it. That's what'll make it fun. Obviously, the whole situation with Roethlisberger is just weird. Saying, "Oh, I just have a migraine," and Tomlin's like, "No, you're concussed. You're very much concussed." You know what I mean? It's like, that's interesting. I mean, that's obviously players want to play, but we'll see what happens there. There's still timing. You know, the Texans are still in it, you can't count out the Seahawks, it'll be fun. I mean, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and really, like, dive too much into the NFL since, you know, I mean, obviously I watch the games, I got Red Zone, but I haven't had a chance to really dive into, the playoff situations heading in. I mean, let me ask you one question. The Vikings, obviously, how far do you think they can go? They look like a playoff team, obviously. Where do you see the Vikings going? How far do you think they could go in the playoffs?
You know, I think they're a first-round out team. But depending on the matchup, if they get an NFC East draw, they're a wild card, they could win a game. But I think Bridgewater is still a year away from, if he's going to become a finished product, from being that. Peters has been great. He's had a great year. But I don't put them in the elite status yet. I mean, they could still beat the Packers in Week 17, but that was an opportunity at home to kind of flex their muscles, and they weren't able to do it. So I think they're still a little bit ways away yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. Looking at the other contender, I mean, Carolina, you mentioned that obviously. Compared to the rest of the NFC and the flaws on the rest of the teams, like, are they a Super Bowl contender?
Who's that?
The Carolina Panthers. I mean, obviously they have to be.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, they have to be. I mean. Again, do I think they're the best team in the league, in the NFC? No, but I think they're in the top two or three. Are they a contender? Sure. Again, I want to see what Seattle and Green Bay look like going into the playoffs. But right now, them and the Cardinals have been the most consistent teams. And, you know, even though they're not doing it with flat, yeah, sure, they're definitely a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, no, I agree. With that, anything else you want to cover NFL-wise? Just since we've been gone from before the Thanksgiving, James White played well for the Patriots, the former Badgers running back, a couple weeks ago. Melvin Gordon still hasn't really caught on that well in San Diego, which is it's disappointing. But then again, behind that offensive line, and you're also competing for time with Danny Woodhead, I'm not necessarily surprised. That he hasn't necessarily had a solid season, and he's also had trouble with fumbling the ball too. On top of that, any other news before we switch over to college?
I think we can switch over to college now and talk about that for a while.
Yeah, so look at that. Let's start off with the big victory right now for the Badgers. If you guys haven't heard, Badgers win 66-58 over the Syracuse Orangemen in Syracuse. So it's a big road win. Unexpected. Obviously the Syracuse Orangemen were ranked coming into the game, and then you saw the Badgers held them out, did some nice rebounding, and you see the Badgers come out the victors. And let me just try to find that real quick, just those quick box score. The Badgers, and you've noticed it too, it's going to be one of those years. They're 5-3 right now with that win. And you had a guy like Ethan Happ, the redshirt freshman, come in, 18 points, 15 rebounds. Nigel Hayes, 15 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists on 5 of 15 shooting. And Vito Brown contributed 14 and 8. Bronson Koenig, 12 and 6 with an assist. And, the starters, provided literally 65 of the 66 points. So it's they'll have some stuff to work on there. But, you look at what they did against the Syracuse Orangemen. Held them to 35% shooting on the evening, 29% from three-point range. That's been some of the Badgers' downfall early in the season, looking at the fact that they've given up over 40% from three-point range. But also, Syracuse really bombed at the free-throw line, 11 of 20 from the field, and the Badgers out-rebounded Syracuse 51 to 25. And that's all despite, committing 20 turnovers. So it's a good victory. Obviously, this team's going to be Have you had a chance, Scotty, to watch? Obviously, we'll talk a little bit Marquette too. But what have you seen out of Wisconsin and Marquette that have really made this? These young teams. Like, what do you like about them, and what are some things that are going to be frustrating for you?
Well, obviously, one of them is at the end of his career. But I like both coaches. I think they're both well coached teams. But I think you hit it on the head. Young youth. I didn't think it coming into the year. I think Wisconsin still has more upside, though they have a meat grinder of a Big Ten schedule that they're going to have to navigate through. But I think they have the best chance to make the NCAA tournament, but not, like I said, not as a favorite, not as a top four seed in any region, Marquette, the Big East, I think Marquette can finish above 500 overall. They're going to be better than they've been the last couple of years, but I still think they're a year or two away from being an NCAA tournament team and from being a Big East contender. I think they're inconsistent. A lot of inconsistency for both teams. Like I said, Wisconsin shooting the ball, they've been very inconsistent. I just think that Wisconsin, because of the style of play and because of the players that have been brought in specifically for that system, have a better chance of picking it up quicker and closing that gap in the learning curve, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so where did it go with that, with the downfall? I mean, obviously I don't follow Marquette as much.
What a surprise.
I know. Well, it's nothing against Marquette. Obviously doing some editing duties now for Bucky's fifth quarter. It's been obviously I've had to focus that, and then along with our twin boys and our rambunctious 4-year-old. But no, I know. And obviously I'm not one of those Badger haters that, or the Badgers that fans are, or alum for that matter, that would hate on Marquette. Obviously I have respect for both programs. Obviously I grew up being a Marquette fan, actually, with Jim McElvain and some of the other former Warriors before they turned into the Golden Eagles. But was it just the talent roster, or just getting used to, Wojciechowski's, the coach, the new coach's philosophy? Like, what's been the big thing, in your opinion, that's taken the longest for them to kind of start really adapting and get in that record? First thing you're
You kind of broke up at the very end, but I got most of that question. Well, I think whatever happened at the end of the Buzz Williams tenure that last year, when they were favored to do some good things and it just fell apart, I don't know. I still can't explain that. I don't know if they tired of him, of Buzz. I liked Buzz. I mean, I've met him. I worked, talked to him. But some people say he just kind of got it got stale, so to speak. The message got stale. So because of that, I think that some people left and there was a little bit of a purge and whatnot. But if you look at this team now, they're so young. You know, Wilson's a sophomore, Cohen's a sophomore. They got the freshman Allenson and they have the junior, the older brother, the older Allenson. But otherwise, they have four juniors, they have one senior, and it's a kid who. It's a kid who doesn't even contribute. He plays 1 minute a game. So they're young. So you can forgive some of it because they're young. You know, guys like Luke Fisher, he's a junior. I expected a little bit more out of him so far this year. But otherwise, there's some really good building blocks. They've had some great recruiting classes. But it's about, like you said, restocking to fit the system, to fit Wojciechowski's system. And I think that's what the growing pains have been for the first year plus. Under that regime. But I really wish I knew what happened at the end of how it became such a dumpster fire the last year of Buzz Williams after a very successful career here and just a very disappointing last season and then, of course, his surprise exit and onto other pasture.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously you have the Milwaukee Panthers, you have the Green Bay Phoenix. As well, I mean, you have some great teams too, where you have that ability. I mean, there's some good basketball here in Wisconsin, so you hope that all those teams get back into it. And looking back, I mean, even just what we've seen out of the Badgers games right now coming up.
I'm sorry, I do want to give some credit. Milwaukee has three losses. They lost a tough one. In overtime to Duquesne, they only lost by 3 points to Murray State. Murray State's always a team that gives people trouble. And then an 8-point loss to Notre Dame, at Notre Dame. So they played a couple of tougher out-of-conference games, and they've held their own. They got a couple more. Obviously, they play Wisconsin. They got a date with Minnesota, a Big Ten school, not necessarily a top-tier Big Ten school, but a Big Ten school. They might surprise some teams. It wouldn't surprise me if they're competing for the conference title going into the last couple weeks of the season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Looking at this, let's go to some college football. Before we get kind of talking about the Badger season this year, let's talk about the coaching carousel. It's that time of the year. The Badgers actually went through it. Albeit, I would say a week later, about a year ago this time. I remember it was December 10th when Gary Anderson bolted for Corvallis, Oregon. Nothing against that city, but without even visiting that city, he went over there, and the Badgers had to look for its third head coach within three seasons. And the Badgers, I don't think we'll have to deal with that right now when they have homegrown and obviously Wisconsin alum, former player, former offensive coordinator Paul Christ at the helm. Though you'll see if Dave Aranda, the defensive coordinator, that with the Badgers defense being first in scoring defense, third in total defense, was it fifth against the run, sixth against the pass, see if they if his name gets called for another defensive coordinator position in college, a head coaching position somewhere, or even in the NFL as a defensive assistant. That remains to be seen. But you're looking at, maybe it's something along those lines with Paul Christ that I can segue with. Obviously, he's a former Wisconsin player. And you take a look at now, he's a head coach. But then you have, the Miami Hurricanes. There's sources. I mean, ESPN's talking about this now. Mark Richt, the former Georgia head coach that was fired a day or so ago, now looking to possibly go back home and be an alum. Looking at the fact that he could be going home and becoming head coach there. And then you've also heard Kirby Smart's name, also I believe he's former Georgia player, going back to be a Bulldogs head coach and possibly bringing They're talking about Will Muschamp, the Auburn defensive coordinator, former Florida head coach, with him as defensive coordinator out there. What have you? And then you're hearing about Al Golden, the former Miami coach with Rutgers, Maryland's hired Michigan's defensive coordinator. And then even USC just hired from within instead of going for a big name coach. They keep their interim coach. Your thoughts so far, just through the first week? It's been so many news. I don't think I've read half of the news. Your thoughts so far on the coaching carousel in college football?
Well, it's interesting to see guys like Les Miles, for example, on the hot seat. But then again, it's the SEC, and, it's win or go home, But I'm not surprised. I mean, again, sometimes coaches lose their team. Sometimes the alum loses faith. Sometimes the boosters lose faith. I mean, it's far more political than just, well, hey, how'd they do on the field? How this, how that? But I was surprised by both Rick and Miles in the word that they're probably going to be let go. But then again, at the same time, like we said, it's a different world in the SEC than it is in even the ACC and Pac-12 and Big Ten. I mean, it's a different world down there. It's just a whole different animal, and their expectations are always a little bit more amped up.
Absolutely, and that's, look at that, and it's, you mentioned it. I mean, it's like, obviously the Texas football with just down in the South, football is huge down there. You look at the fact that, obviously even with, like, Charlie Strong in his first couple of seasons, he had to go through a lot down there through boosters. And I don't know, LSU, that whole situation was just crazy. I didn't realize how, it sounded just like, they went on a 3-game losing streak, and then everyone wanted him gone, which, according to some Big Ten schools, if they had just gone through a 3-game losing streak, but won the rest, they'd probably give him, like, the keys to the city and be head coach for life with no penalties for any type of bad things he did. But that situation was odd. Minnesota's was interesting, where they took the interim tag off of Tracy Clays, who's now getting a 3-year deal. Illinois was really interesting. Bill Cubitt's only getting a 2-year extension. I mean, I don't know about you. Isn't it just odd when you see the fact that they get obviously you would like to get a coach at least a 5-year deal that shows commitment for, especially for the incoming recruiting class coming in, saying, yeah, if you're going to be here 4 or 5 years, this coach has a contract there. There's security, or at least a web, some false sense of security, because obviously they can be fired at any moment if they wanted to be, regardless of buyout or not. But, I mean, I guess within the Big Ten, I mean, I just find it interesting that they gave those head coaches that short of a leash and went from there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But again, every sport nowadays, with media and all the different outlets, and everything seems like it's a 365, 24/7, news cycle. I mean, there's really no off season anymore. Even during the season, things that would normally be handled in the off season now seem to come to light. But I'll tell you what, speaking of a little off the topic, but about the Big Ten, we talked about the SEC and the expectations. I think overall this has been a great year for Big Ten football, and a little bit of a rebound year. Some big non-conference wins, some high rankings in the poll, some high-profile coaches like Harbaugh and now Urban Meyer a couple of years ago coming in. I guess, though, the key is going to be what their one-loss record is in bowl games, especially in the important bowls, the bowls played from January 30th on. I think they have a chance, the Big Ten has a chance to cement itself as a rebounding conference and a power conference once again.
Yeah, no, you look at the fact that before the Badgers dropped out of the polls, I think when they jumped back into the AP poll, but you had 6 teams in the top 25. You had 4, 5, 6, which actually turned out to be what the college playoff was, with Iowa, Michigan State, and Ohio State, respectively, there. But, yeah, you have, out of the top 6 teams in the nation, 3 are in the Big Ten. Obviously, they're 4, 5, 6, but still. Also, the fact that Harbaugh has Michigan turned around now, and I think you and I have spoken to it, where it's okay to have the powerhouse in Michigan back again. The Big Ten needs Michigan to be a powerhouse again to help you know, to help its national standing. You need, obviously, Ohio State to still remain big. But you're also, you know, it's Northwestern had the big win early on against Stanford. And, you know, there are some good wins. And you know, Iowa, you know, beat, obviously, Iowa State, which fired its head coach, Paul Rhodes, which now is Toledo, former Toledo's head coach, Matt Campbell's over heading over there. But they beat, you know, a decent squad in Iowa State. But then they beat Pat Narduzzi and Pitt as at home in overtime. And so, you know, there's some... It's a good sign for the Big Ten, and even if you know, I know you don't like this too, Scotty, but look at the recruiting rankings. You know, there's some, I mean, there's some talent in the Big Ten. Obviously, Ohio State's among the best. Michigan State's there. Michigan with Harbaugh getting their name up there. They're getting these kids, and the thing is, though, I know we talk about it, and you see some of the kids fall to the wayside, the 4- or 5-star kids, but you see what Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh can get out of 4- or 5-star kids. Same thing with Mark D'Antonio. The Big Ten, you know, it's been resurgent, and we'll see what comes of it down the road. We'll see what Penn State and James Franklin can do. I'm not necessarily been impressed with the past two seasons with Franklin as the Penn State head coach, but even looking at what Crist has done with the fact that Corey Clement's been out for the majority of the season with the sports hernia injury, and then him, they haven't fully disclosed why Clement sat against Minnesota though, due to that. Being cited twice for disorderly conduct for a November 8th incident is seems like it's a pretty accurate assumption to make there. But, you know, like you have coaches that can mold talent, whether it's nationally recruited or even as in Wisconsin's case, you have walk-ons that, you know, contributing at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and linebacker, you know, that they can – mold those players and make them successful in this you know, in college football. And so I think it's a good thing. The Badgers will need to step up huge, especially when it comes to the fact of next season. You have LSU at Lambeau Field to start the season. You have the simple fact that you have a back-to-back-to-back schedule with Michigan State and Ohio State. Two of the three of those games are on the road, and you know, with Ohio State at home. It's going to be a meat grinder of a season, and if the Badgers can go 9-3 in that season, I think that's a win. But I mean, the Big Ten's getting tougher, and it's it'll be interesting to see how the Badgers respond, especially with some of the talent. And maybe Clement does come back now. Maybe depending on if Beagle comes back, I mean, they'll still have a solid defense too. You know, there's a lot of parts that are more promising than maybe what people had thought before. So. Like I said, with the talent that's in the Big Ten and in the coaching, obviously is a huge factor. There's a bright spot. This isn't just like a 2-year thing, in my opinion. This is going to be not necessarily saying it's an SEC type thing where 6 straight national champions are from that conference, but it's a good swelling to see the conference playing well and reasserting itself after maybe some years of can I say mediocrity, Scotty, or do I say just a down year, a down, you know, down trend for a little bit? Now they're back up, and obviously you have 3 teams in contention for a college football playoff berth.
Yeah, it's nice to see because, you know, you get a little sick of hearing about the SEC all the time. So
exactly. So, and obviously there's tons of recruiting stuff. We'll get Ben Wargo on the show coming up on next week, our buddy over at Badger Nation. I do some guest spots for him for writing for the Badger Nation for football, which I won't get to until bowl game season. But, you know, there's a lot of recruiting stuff going on, too. Obviously, and the big thing, and we talk about, too, Scotty, you're looking at the fact that it's poaching season. So all these coaching changes, you're looking at the fact that, you know, coaches are going after those that verbally committed and we'll see how that plays out. But you know, looking at this year's team real quick, and obviously we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Look at this 2015 Wisconsin Badgers, 9-3. Obviously, 2 heartbreaking losses. They could very well be 11-1, and like we mentioned before, going into at least contention for a New Year's 6 bowl. Looking at maybe, you know, at least an Outback Bowl or a Citrus Bowl, which was the former, or the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl, which is was formerly the Capital One Bowl. All signs point to San Diego when you look at the Holiday Bowl, which could be against a Pac-12 squad, which I think many fans actually are considering going out there now because it's not Florida and it's not just another SEC team like you've seen in the years past. But, you know, two heartbreaking losses, obviously. I'll ask you right off the bat. Do you think that was a catch? Jazz PV's touch, that non-catch, the incompletion that was initially ruled a touchdown. Do you think that PV, did you think he had possession before he went down? Or do you feel that, I mean, do you think they interpreted the rule right? Or do you feel like maybe the interpretation
It was a bad, yeah, it was terrible. That was a catch. And I don't know. That was a catch. And I didn't get to see it when it was happening live. I was in the hospital visiting my uncle, and I had the updates on my phone. And two different times, I was notified that a touchdown was scored. I was DVRing the game. I ended up having to go rewatch it, right? And I'm like, what's going on? Like, why are there points, and then the points come off, and then there's points. And then I got home, and I heard it. Then I heard the post game in the car, and I went home, and I watched it. And I had the luxury of watching it a couple different times and realized, yeah that is definitely it's definitely a catch. So
yeah, but I mean, and even with that though, I mean, we, you know, and with that, you're looking at the fact that, I mean, when you have five turnovers in the game, two fumbles, or, you know, three fumbles, two by the offense, and then also the two interceptions by Sabi, they're just, you know, you're not supposed to win the game that way. I mean, the defense kept it in it. Maybe that's, you know, looking at this as a whole with this season, the fact this defense has been so good. And, yeah, their strength of schedule hasn't been that great. But you take a look at what they did against Iowa, where they, you know, 10-6, where Joe Schobert with his 8 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, two fumble recoveries and a partridge in a pear tree, decides to take over the game there. But, you know, really this defense, we'll start with the bright spots. I mean, Schobert really, really shined. Obviously, he's the Butkus Fitzgerald linebacker of the year, or the Big Ten's best linebacker. But you've seen players like Michael Caputo, Vince Beagle shine. Is there one thing that stands out from this defense either impresses you, or like even going into next year might concern with some of the departures of those seniors?
No, I like the depth overall too. I think the defense is fine. I'm interested to see going forward, you know, how everything's going to shake down with the quarterback situation. You know, because that's always seems to, other than Russell Wilson, we've had decent, gritty, winning quarterbacks. I get it, but we've had one exceptional star in the Barry Alvarez era. Let's be honest. You know, we've had one star, and it was Russell Wilson. The way this offensive line is made up, they don't seem like the ground and pound grinders on running the ball like they've been in years past. I think it's going to be a matter of finding a quarterback that can, you know, that can be exceptional, that can win you ball games, not just be a game manager. You know what I mean? And that seems to be what the quarterbacks who have, even the ones who have been successful, have been game managers. So those are the things I'd like to see addressed now. I mean, will there be another Russell Wilson? No, maybe not, but we got to have some playmakers at that position.
Yeah, I think you're looking at the fact, obviously, in Stavi, I mean, Joel Stavi has played, he's improved greatly. Obviously, his numbers over the past few games have not been as solid as you would like, going up against a really good defense in Northwestern, and then not being dependent upon after that. I mean, and the Badgers had a great, obviously, you know, 199 yards on the ground in the first half alone on 35 carries, kind of returned to that traditional pro-style power physical offense, running offense that you saw out of years past out of Chris and the gang. Welcome sign back, but you're looking at the fact that they had to start their 7th offensive line combination for starters on Saturday, and you had the fact that, I mean, this might have been its most athletic, and now they did it because Walker Williams, the redshirt junior, was out, and he's normally played right guard, but you slid Bo Benchwal from Grafton native, now in at right guard. You put right tackle, who he started against Iowa, so there's some experience. It turned into actually a really impressive line that, I mean, and obviously they Minnesota was wise enough that they stopped at, it was about, you know, 257 yards total on the afternoon, but that first half, I mean, they dominated the game, and with that defense checking in, it's, we'll see what they do against the bowl game. Obviously, with Dan Volz out next year, the junior center, he'll be a senior next year. You'll see Michael Dieter move out back from center to left guard. But there's some good, I mean, it kind of reminds me, a lot of people have pointed back to the 1997 season, Scotty, where you had Chris McIntosh, who was turned into a four-year starter. He was a four-year starter and then, you know, two-time captain in the 98-99 season. But you had a building blocks with Casey Roback, Bill Ferrario, Dave Costa, Aaron Gibson. You had these players that, you know, they just started. That was their first year starting. There's some growing pains. And then 98-99, they started to run wild. They started to, you know, really be dominant on that offensive line. So I'm intrigued really to see how that line responds. And they are losing Tyler Maritz next year. But I know that according to a couple of media reports, Joe Rudolph's really liked Ryan Ramczyk, who, if I'm not mistaken, is a D3 transfer. I think he's from Stevens Point, if I'm not mistaken. And, like you mentioned, you want to see how they develop next year with playmakers. But if Clement comes back, there's one back that comes back. It's an obvious playmaker. You lose Erickson, but you've seen Robert Realright make some plays at wide receiver. Troy Fumagalli gets one more year of seasoning as a tight end threat. Jazz Peavy, the Kenosha native, has come on strong of late this last half of the season. And, you know, depending on who's quarterback, it could be, you're looking at right now, a three-man race, even though it seems like one's not necessarily being considered. But Bart Houston, Alex Hornibrook, who's a southpaw, who will be a redshirt freshman, but then also DJ Gillens, who is playing wide receiver this season. I don't know. I mean, he could be back at wide receiver, but, I mean, hopefully he gets a chance at quarterback. I think he's talented enough to be a dual threat, but also, really be a good passer. I don't know. I think they'll solve for that. The thing is, though, I mean, if they going against next year's schedule, I think there'll be some growing pains still. I think it will come from a quarterbacking position or maybe a skill set position when you have like some really good defenses and some impressive offenses that they'll have to account for.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. So, I think that you know Paul Chris will continue to put his stamp on this program, and I think unlike Anderson, and we didn't know this about Anderson at the time either, in fairness, but I don't think he's looking for the next job. I think he's here for the long haul. He's going to be able to plant his roots, put his stamp on this team, and so I think from that standpoint, they're in a little bit better hands.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one thing that maybe. Just going back to the Gary Henderson hire, and we got about 20 seconds left before our live stream. Well, you guys will hear us coming up a little later. When you guys download the podcast. But, I'd say with the way Anderson was, maybe he didn't necessarily understand, Wisconsin football or what people think Wisconsin football is. I thought what he tried to do in terms of making the team a little bit more athletic, speed, a little faster, a little more aggressive that way, but ultimately, and also with the academic standards or the requirements are much stingier here at the university compared to other schools. I don't know. I think it's you're looking at the fact that this team, maybe wasn't necessarily the best hire, but I mean, it seemed like that for the way he spoke, and I mean, he was always great to us, but. Now you have a guy like Paul Christ who obviously has his roots in the state, and I think big things are coming, and we'll obviously it'll take maybe I think a couple of years for that to really grow. But this team, I mean, the way that the coaching stuff that they put together, if they can stick together, they got a ways to go. I mean, they have a ways to go, but they have a chance to really, really make something of the program still. So, but yeah.
I agree 100% with you there. And I do look forward to, I think, what's going to be a very good future. But, again, this year's a little bit frustrating. Again, the record's fine. When it's all said and done, if you weren't a fan or if you weren't somebody who followed the team like we follow it, you'll look at it 10 years from ago, oh, yeah, they were 9-3. But, again, I think they left some wins. They left some gold on the table, so to speak.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. Yeah, because, I mean, I think, I'm not saying they'd have a chance against Michigan State, but I think they'd have a, you know, I thought, yeah, against, I would say
well,
maybe
I think
against,
that, but here, Jake, here's where I disagree, though. I think they would have a chance against Michigan State because of the defense. I think the defense would keep that game close, that maybe a turnover. I still would have picked Michigan State to win, don't get me wrong. But I think that defense can be an equalizer, letting a team hang around long enough that it could have made it an interesting game.
I can't disagree with you there. I don't know if, you know, that offense, and obviously having Clement back, if he would have came back for this game, would have been, you know, would have been huge. That granted, if Clement would have been healthy this entire year, I think Wisconsin beats Iowa, and I think they definitely beat Northwestern. Granted, coulda, woulda, shoulda, that's hypothetical. That's just my opinion. Because you saw even when the offensive line wasn't blocking great against Rutgers, he was patient enough to bust through the holes and make some pretty big gains out of maybe what the other running backs maybe would have had 2 or 3 yards for a gain on certain plays, but. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, I think, and obviously, you know, the biggest thing I think for the Badgers now is, especially for the seniors. I've talked to a lot of former Badgers just for the walk on book that I've been putting together, and you know, one of them mentioned like they never during that '98-'99 season they didn't want to put any of the seniors out on a losing note to lose their last game, and you know, now they go on, they'll probably go to San Diego and. You know, guys like Schobert and Caputo and Tanner McAvoy, who really never got much of the offensive footing, but you know, I think he's tied for fifth in the nation in interceptions right now. You know, those guys, Stavi could be the all-time winningest quarterback in Badgers history if he leads the Badgers to victory against whoever the Pac-12 school is. And so we'll, this seniors, I mean, they've been gritty. I think they've kind of personified Wisconsin football just in the past with the way they've played. But literally, I think they're two plays away, Scotty, from us previewing Michigan State, Wisconsin, kind of going back to the rematch from the first ever Big Ten championship game. It could have been that.
Yeah, absolutely. So. No Badger football for a little while, but next time we meet, we will talk about the bowls because the championship games will be played, the bowls will be set. Hopefully we'll get together next week. If we do, we'll talk about a Packer victory as well. We'll see. Maybe we'll get into some Bucks. We haven't had a chance to talk. I feel like we've slighted them, and it's partially because we haven't been able to do shows weekly like we'd like to, so we've been kind of jam-packed with Badger and Packer news, but I think obviously, some of that's going to lighten up with the football season coming to an end as well. So, looking forward to touching base on all those things.
Absolutely, and you guys just stay tuned with us. We'll, like I said, we'll talk. Hopefully, we'll be able to, like I said, we'll talk some bowl, we'll talk Packers, but then we'll also talk some baseball. Obviously, we need a chance to talk about David Price and the big deal that Boston gave him in the past 24 hours. We talk about some moves that the Brewers have made. I'll talk about the Bucks. We'll try to get one of our Bucks.
Yeah, the Brewers are apparently going to try to play with 25 shortstops and second basemen. I think that's the plan.
Bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out. I like it. We'll see how that counts. We'll see how they do over there. So, on that note, guys, follow us on Twitter at B5Q at Kielbasa Kings WI. Scott Wisniewski 2 at Jake Coco B5Q. And they will come back sometime next week. Hopefully with my computer working a little bit better so people can hear me more. But thanks for listening, guys. Doza Bachenya. We'll see you guys soon.
Accordion solo, American Polka, played by Mr. John J. Kimball, Edison Records. ¶¶